Penguin Random House Audio presents The Catch by Amy Lee. Read for you by Kelsey Navarro Foster. Chapter 1. If I were a character in a classic slasher film, I'd be the first to die. That sounds morbid, but hear me out. First, I lack the necessary endurance to run long distances without being caught. I have no sense of direction, to the point where I regularly get lost in my own condo parking garage. On any given day, I'm usually alone, leaving the killer ample time to strike when I'm vulnerable. And when placed in high-pressure situations, I tend to make rash, ill-advised decisions. Case in point, when being pursued, my first instinct is to trap myself inside the tight confines of the condo elevator. Rookie mistake. Melanie! Melanie! Wait for me! Calls an all-too-familiar ear-piercing voice. I frantically press the close button no less than 11 times, heart hammering against my chest wall. Picture the slasher scene where the woman hides in a closet as the killer ponders his next move, mouth breathing heavily on the other side of the door. As the click-clack of footsteps on marbled tiles grows dangerously near, the elevator doors begin to close. Bless. Just one more inch. Half an inch. And then they stop. A sliver shy of sealing shut. The doors abruptly reopen like a record scratch. My whole body folds inward, desperate to seek refuge like a turtle avoiding all reality in its protective shell. On second thought, turtles do not have the gift of speed, and in the face of my pursuer's demented smile, one needs to run, or at least power walk. One could say I'm being a touch dramatic. See, my pursuer isn't really a crazed, axe-wielding serial killer who wants to hack me into tiny pieces. He's my prepubescent neighbor, Ian Montgomery. Melanie, you look ravishing. Hi, Ian. I summon a sweet smile, taking stock of his short-sleeved button-down. It hangs off his lithe frame, juxtaposed with his creased khakis, which are 2 inches too short since his winter growth spurt. A man in tapered joggers takes advantage of the holdup, rushing in behind Ian before the doors close, sealing us in together. The color of your top brings out your suntan, Ian tells me, his gaze hovering dangerously close to my cleavage. To be fair, it's at his eye level since he's approximately 4'9". I respond to Ian with a low, thank you, shifting a thick lock of hair over my chest like a protective blanket before shuffling to the right, my Greek takeout bag tucked snugly under my arm. Ian wastes zero time reclaiming the dead space. I also liked your bikini photo from the other day. My cheeks burst into flame when Jogger shoots me an accusatory look over his meaty shoulder. Ian is referring to my latest post, a beach photo shoot wherein I attempted to channel the raw sex appeal of Daniel Craig in Casino Royale, particularly that slow-mo scene where he emerges seductively from the water, beads of moisture shimmering over his taut, suspiciously hairless bod. As it turns out, I have the charisma of a potato compared to James Bond. For the record, I did not send this child a bikini photo. I clarify to the back of Jogger's shiny scalp. And it's the truth. The kid keeps close tabs on my social media. Ian pouts. I'm not a child. I'm basically a teenager. You just turned 11, I remind him. Trust, I'm not normally this dismissive of children. But in case it isn't obvious, Ian has been nurturing an unhealthy crush on me since last year when he and his silver fox of a dad moved in next door. Instead of spending his days playing first-person shooter video games and eating cheese puffs by the bag like most boys his age, he prefers to dream up new and disturbing ways to confess his love for me, including ambushing me in the hallways and writing romantic haikus in my honor. Of course, I've firmly yet politely explained that I'm way too old for him, practically prehistoric, and that his advances are inappropriate. Ian still hasn't accepted this. Either that or the power of agonizing, unrequited love has clouded his judgment. I can't help but feel sorry for him. I've never seen him with another kid his age, which is why I try to be pleasant to him despite his overt creepiness. Unfortunately, the nicer I am, the more emboldened he becomes. Ian leans in to take a dramatic whiff of my Greek food. Smells good. Is it just for you? Yep, dinner for one, I say proudly, giving the takeout bag a gentle, loving rock, stroking it like it's a newborn baby. Greek on wheels is my favorite, Ian informs me, thick brows bouncing as Joggers exits the elevator on floor 6. And dinner for one sounds like rock bottom. Damn, this kid went for the jugular. I tighten my grip on my food, hitching my shoulders in defense. Jeez, drag me, Ian. And it's really not rock bottom. Dinner for one has its perks. There's no one interrupting my zen by chewing their meat loudly in my ear, or swooping in to steal the best bite I was saving for last. Ian swings me a knowing side eye. No one likes being alone, and you've been alone every night since you broke up with Ronan, the one who was obsessed with cryptocurrency. Ronan was the last guy I dated. He always pressured me to split my meal because he couldn't choose only one item off the menu. I know what you're thinking. Splitting food isn't that bad. It's romantic even. But after a childhood of going to bed on an empty stomach, sharing doesn't exactly evoke the warm and fuzzies. And if lectures about crypto and meal splitting weren't shriveling my libido enough, I had no choice but to end things immediately when he suggested we take our relationship to the next level and move in together after 4 months of dating. I bristle at Ian, unable to suppress the creeping urge to justify my life choices. I'm not alone. I have friends. I fix my defensive stare on the button panel. Just a few more floors until sweet freedom. Two friends, Crystal and Tara, I specify. When I say it out loud, having exactly two friends sounds rather tragic for someone with 500,000 social media followers. Ian moves on, wholly uninterested in my pitiful social calendar. I'm going to a poetry reading tonight if you want to join. Ian, you're being inappropriate again, I warn, bouncing on the balls of my feet when we finally arrive at our floor. Sorry, my dad says I need to dial it back. He jogs to keep up with me as we head down the hallway toward our respective condo units. Your dad is right, I say, digging my keys out of my pocket. Aren't there cute girls or boys your own age you could yearn for instead? He averts his eyes to his sockless ankles. None who will talk to me. Kenna Palmer says I'm a weirdo freak. First, Kenna Palmer sounds like a miserable brat. She'll regret that in 20 years when you're a mega-rich tech entrepreneur with an all-black interior private jet. And second, you're not... I bite my lip, summoning the most delicate way to get my point across. Okay, you're a little weird. Maybe a little... intense. Overzealous. He fiddles with the collar of his dress shirt. Isn't intense and overzealous good? Let me put it this way. You're at high risk of getting your heart skewered over a flaming barbecue if you keep up this type of behavior in a middle school. And if you ask me, love is a burden to be avoided at all costs, I warn. See you later, Ian. For the briefest moment, he dips his chin in consideration. Hearts are made to be broken, said the great Oscar Wilde. I like being alone, with my heart intact. I call through the crack in the door before closing it completely. I repeat those words as I face my empty condo. I like being alone. The more I say it, the more it will be true. Maybe Ian was right. My Greek dinner for one looks depressing at my dining table for 12. I was convinced this gargantuan table was necessary for all the wine and charcuterie nights I'd host.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?